Support for agricultural information on WILL comes from Busey. With over 145 years of agribusiness experience, Busey offers solutions, resources, and expertise to support local landowners. Busey, your dream, our promise.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 10th day of December 2014. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vaik. She's at Stuart Peterson from right here in Champaign County. We'll also take a closer look at what happened in the USDA reports released earlier today. The World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates were out, and they did make some changes. We'll discuss the cash grain market with the folks over at the Andersons facility near Logansport, Indiana. That's their Climbers ethanol plant. We'll discuss the weather forecast today, too. That with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City as we make our way through this Wednesday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's check now the numbers as they finished up in Chicago for this Wednesday afternoon. December corn futures at $3.82.5 today. We're down a half. The March at $3.93.75, 1.25 lower. And May futures at $4.02.25, down a penny and a quarter, rather a penny and a half for the day. July contract at $4.08.5, down 1.75. And December futures at $4.21 in the corn pit, the new crop harvest month, down 2.5 cents. From the soy complex, bean futures for the day at $10.32, 17.25 lower. And the January contract, March at $10.38.5, down 17, and the May at $10.45, down 17 as well. July futures for the soybeans at $10.50, down 16.5, and next year's November at $10.09.5, down 10.75. Bean meal finished the day lower, 6.40 at $4.05.20 in the December contract. January at $3.69.10, down $6.20. The bean oil futures at $31.67 in the lead December, down 24 cents for the day. Wheat futures in the Chicago contract for the soft red at $5.93.25, down 7.25, and the hard red finished the July futures there at $6.24.5, down 5.75. Live cattle futures from Chicago at the CME Group at $162.50 were a dime higher in the December and a nickel lower in the February at $163. Even feeder cattle finished up the January at $231.55. down $1.22.5. And the lean hogs for the day at $87.25, up 30 cents. You're listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report. It does come to you from Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers.
Here's what some of the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil is trading at $60.93 a barrel. That's $2.89 lower at this hour. It has not dropped yet through the $60 level, but we'll keep our eye on it and check up with Jackie Vaik here in a bit to see where that manages to go for the day. January futures in the heating oil at $2.48, down 3.5 cents for the day. And the gasoline on the RBOB or wholesale price at $1.64.4, down 7.9. Natural gas trading $3.69.9, up 4.7. And ethanol futures are currently trading at $1.67.5, down 3.5 cents. From the outside markets, we also find the Dow Jones Industrial Average 267 points lower at 17,513. The gold down just about $3 at $1,229. And the U.S. dollar index trading at 88.692. That's unchanged for the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area today. Cloudy skies, a high of 35 degrees. Tonight, cloudy and a low of 25. Thursday, mostly cloudy and 36. And Thursday night, cloudy with a 26-degree low. Friday, partly sunny skies, a high of 43. West winds there at 6 to 8. And Friday night, mostly cloudy, a low of 32 degrees. On Saturday, partly sunny skies, a high of 48. Should be gorgeous. Saturday night, mostly cloudy and 38. And Sunday, mostly cloudy and 50 degrees. More on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour. We'll check the growing regions around the planet with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
It's December the 10th, 2014. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. This morning, the United States Department of Agriculture updated its world agricultural supply and demand estimates. It now says the ending stocks number for corn at the end of this year, that would be the fall of 2015 for the marketing year, will drop from 2.008 billion last month to 1.998 billion this month as a projection, although USDA has not changed the average farm price or the cash price of corn. It ranges from $3.20 to $3.80, still with a midpoint at $3.50. The midpoint for soybeans remained the same as well, at $9 to $11 on the range and $10 on the midpoint, with an ending stocks there that dropped 40 million bushels from 450 million to 410 million bushels. U.S. wheat supplies, on the other hand, jumped just a bit from 644 million on the projection for the ending stocks to 654 million. However, demand is driving the price a bit higher. The change is now from 565 to 615 last month on a cash price nationwide to $5.80 to $6.20, with an average midpoint at $6 even for the wheat. And finally, on the world front, a couple of notes of importance for corn, up 1% from last month to this month in total supply, although Argentina's projection has dropped 4.3%. You can find all the details of this morning's USDA World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimate figures on our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. Now let's see what the marketplace did with these numbers and talk about that just a bit with Jackie Vake. She's at Stuart Peterson from right here in Champaign County. Jackie, thank you so much for taking the time with us at 11 o'clock, of course. As we just talked about, USDA released the World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates. There were some changes, and corn managed to drop below kind of a level that most people think about as something important, $2 billion or $2 billion as a carryout. Now, just below that, barely below that, but it is below that. What difference does it make?
What difference does it make? I think it doesn't make much of a difference until we get to the January report from that standpoint, because everyone certainly asks questions about the size of the crop and whether we're going to see production actually drop on corn. And if it does drop on corn, and six out of the last 7 years we've actually seen the USDA increase demand on the January report from the December report, if that would be the case, well, you know, then that could be a real shocker to the marketplace. But I think a lot is built in already, Todd, including the idea that we're going to have less corn acres. You know, that's certainly been a big talk, and that's in the market. In fact, the reaction today, as far as I'm concerned, is a big statement as to what the market's all about. You know, we had a less than expected bean carry out. We had a less than expected corn carry out, and yet we ended the day negative. Why? It's because they already had it built in ahead of time, and we were within the ranges. So I think the more important things that might have come out of the report is that they dropped China corn imports from 2.5 to 2 million metric tons, didn't do anything on beans. They increased the size of the China corn crop. It became apparent that Argentina is going to be able to meet any demand that Brazil has for wheat. And I think on the bean side of things, what was interesting was the fact that USDA had left it at 94 million for Brazil, even though CONAB came out today and said 95.8 million, which was a shock as far as I was concerned. They were down to 90.5 last month. So I guess it's a big statement as to how fast decent weather can turn a crop around. And when I did talk with Dr. Cordonnier, he was telling me that there are going to be beans in Paraná that are going to be coming off in December already, before the first of the year. So we had kind of discounted the idea that that could happen. I think that the bigger things are, this was a five-minute report, you know, and now we're on to looking at what January may bring us and what the end of the year type of trade might actually be with all the repositioning that goes on.
One other item that was in the executive summary from USDA was on corn. You mentioned Argentina already, but they made some notes about Argentina. The size of its crop projection dropped, 4.1 or 4.7%? I don't recall which one of the two at this point, but it dropped from last month to this month. And they took some time to outline what was important, they thought, to that particular marketplace. They kind of think that there's not a lot of incentive, I suppose, for Argentine farmers to plant corn.
Well, not really. The only plus they have, of course, is that they've got good moisture. You know, that's one thing. But when you take a good, close look at Argentina, you're at 40% inflation. You know, credit is a tough situation. And, you know, this bank threat that came out day before yesterday, them saying they're not going to give them credit unless they actually make sales on beans. I thought it was a positive. I noticed the export tax dropped from 35 to 20%. So, you know, the government is trying to get them to move things. Their input costs are high. Another thing that's really switched down there is pasture land now is a lot more profitable, you know, being able to put cattle out onto pastures. So these are the lowest corn prices we've seen since 2009 in Argentina. And, you know, there's lots of corn in the world. Even if China needs corn, U.S. has a big crop to be able to compete against Argentina. So I don't think that there's much incentive there at all for them to plant corn. But then again, we have to always remember that there are different reasons for rotating crops and doing those kinds of things too. So the pundits can never outguess what the, you know, what the farmer may or may not have to do for the health of his land.
What do you think about the outside markets at this point? And when I think about the outside markets, I'm thinking of maybe exports from other countries, and of course you'll have to come around to crude oil at some point.
Yeah, crude is certainly in the backs of everybody's mind. Exports from other countries, well, we've certainly seen Russian exports are up 32% over a year ago. We know that Ukrainian exports are up, and we're just seeing a lot of competition coming in against us but not being reflected in our market at this point in time. And so I think that's going to be the key. And I'm going to roll back to Brazilian, the Brazilian bean crop going up as big as it did. That would be 11% more than the record crop that they had last year, which is really quite amazing. 9.7 million metric tons more. So if that would come to fruition, that'll make her tough. But crude oil, man, what an interesting situation we have going on there. January actually hit 70 or 60 plus today. So that was very close to the 200-month moving average. That's the lowest we've seen crude oil since July of 2009. It's dropped $40 since that point in time. And so this is certainly putting some pressure on the frackers. And I went out to the American rail system and looked at the weekly numbers, and we are seeing that there's definitely less oil moving than, let's say, was moving 3 to 4 weeks ago, and there's definitely a little more grain moving. So, you know, that's a positive. OPEC came out today with their projections for 2015, and that's what started to sink the market. But what really sunk the market was the EIA surprised us with a big increase in the supplies of oil here in the U.S. So, you know, I think that the overriding issue is, you know, the world has a larger supply because of production that's going on here, and the world, you know, the weak world demand. We just have slow economic growth over in Europe and even in China, where we had been growing very rapidly before. So you could see the Dow Jones didn't like it very much. It's down, 225 right now?
Right.
As soon as that report came out, it definitely had a negative impact there, too.
On the flip side of that marketplace, it appears that ethanol production has remained strong, this despite the lower cost of the price of crude oil as compared to the price of corn.
It has. I mean, I think it's interesting, but we have to keep in mind when you look at the ratio. You know, I always look at RBOB to ethanol. 1.03 is where we are right now. If you roll back just a few months, we were at 1.49. That's a reflection of profitability, and so we know that profit margins are getting squeezed. We haven't gotten to the point yet where we actually see the gasoline price dropping, you know, lower than where the ethanol ratio should be. And then, so I would expect we'll probably still do that, but each week we better keep a mighty close eye on it.
Okay, let's wrap it all up and go back to the top for just a bit. And top of the mind, of course, would be prices, what farmers can and should do. What are you talking to them about most often these days?
Well, you know, probably a rerun of everything I've been talking about for a long time, but, you know, knowing what your bottom line is, knowing, you know, trying to really figure out. So guys are having a tough time. You know, at this point in time, beans still pencil better than corn just because of lower input costs and lower trucking costs and other things. And yet we've moved closer together than what we had been when we first started talking about a lot more bean acres. So if you're gonna shift over to beans, I think, and we're still above $10, you need to at least have a put in place to protect yourself from the downside in case we do end up with more. On the corn side of things, you know, if a sale at 420 or 425 is the worst sale you make for the year, that's a pretty darn good situation. So I just think there are too many questions out there, and you've got to be prepared for whatever the market's going to do. So for right now, downside is the greatest risk, and then be prepared to re-own if that's the case. I mean, I think you can make an argument for both sides of the marketplace. It's going to be probably a rough and tumble ride as we get here into the end of the year and then before the January USDA report, Todd.
Downside is the bigger risk, yet basis remains strong, doesn't it?
It does. And, you know, when you look at that basis situation, that's definitely, as far as I'm concerned, been supporting corn price as well as bean price. You know, normally we don't see the CFTC showed last week that the positions at the commercial level, actually, they got rid of a bunch of short contracts. Well, that would say to me that we probably have guys, because basis is better than normal, that are locking HTAs in, and then they become a cash contract, so they buy back the futures they sold to protect themselves from having paid the farmer too much when he locked in the HTA. And so that's something that we seldom, if ever, see. You know, we normally don't have a basis that's really good at this time of year. So I would expect that, and I would advise guys to make sure they stay on top of it. If they start to see basis widening for not any great good reason, then you know that they've got their needs covered and that they're feeling more comfortable about where they are, and they're starting to actually look at the size of the crop that we've got.
I suppose that just about covers it all for the day. Hey, thanks so much.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You too.
Bye-bye.
That, of course, is Jackie Vake. Yeah. She's with Stuart Peterson from right here in Champaign County and joins us on this Wednesday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report. You can hear her again if you'd like on our website. The address there is willag.org. That's willag.org. If you're looking for all the numbers from USDA's report this morning, you can find it on that website. My Twitter feed is posted there. I'm at Commodity Week. David is at David A. Dickey if you want to follow us on Twitter directly, but you can take a quick look at what was posted earlier this morning on my feed at Commodity Week. It's willag.org, and those USDA numbers are always there over in the USDA reports section. Just hit the link over on the right-hand side of the page. That's where, at willag.org. Now, up next, you know, when farmers around the nation sign up for crop insurance from the government in March, they'll find some changes. I'll have the differences. The changes to the crop insurance program come courtesy of the 2014 Farm Bill. Gary Schnitke follows the crop insurance program for the University of Illinois. The Ag Economist told farmers at a November conference they'd be dealing with three new items when signing up for the 2015 plans. First, and maybe most notably, Schnitke says farmers will need to provide proof of conservation compliance on any highly erodible lands enrolled in crop insurance.
To be eligible for the subsidies associated with crop insurance, you will have to be in conservation compliance.
The second change to the crop insurance program involves the APH, or actual production history. From this point forward, it will be possible to drop a low yield from the calculation.
We don't know a lot about this yet. This was actually something put in place more for Kansas, Oklahoma, Texas farmers, but it gives the ability to drop a low yield from the APH. Presumably, there's going to be a charge associated with that if you choose to drop a yield from the APH. If county yields are below a certain level, you will be able to drop yield from APH. Whether or not we take that or look at that, we'd like to see the rates associated with those and what that dropping that yield will be.
Well, the third change to the federal government's crop insurance program is the introduction of a new policy. It's called SCO. That stands for Supplemental Coverage Option.
It provides county protection, and that's a key word here, county protection from 86% down to the coverage level of your combo product.
Here's what that effectively means. Throughout the Corn Belt, where most farmers choose revenue protection or RP crop insurance, the SCL product would cover losses from the RP level up to 86%. Many farmers in Illinois use 85% RP products, and that would leave just 1% for SCO to cover. Not worth it, according to Schnittke. This program is not available in all counties around the nation for all program crops and is only an option for those choosing to sign up for the new PLC, or Price Loss Coverage, program under the Farm Bill. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. Let's turn our attention now to the cash grain market. The folks at the Andersons facility outside of Logansport, Indiana, that's the Clymers ethanol plant, are with us. Stephen Lineber is on the line. Hi, Stephen. How are you?
Todd, this is Patrick Hoffman.
Oh, I'm sorry, Patrick. Thanks for correcting me on that. Tell me about the marketplace in your area and what it is that has been happening at this point.
Well, for the most part, our local area in just north of Lafayette had a decent corn and bean yield this fall. Took us a while to get it out of the field, but we got it out and in the bin and secured. And now basis is appreciating. You know, we've gone from a 30 under type basis level in the fall to 10 under, 10 to 12 under for corn, and option to small overs for beans. It seems like that is moving some commodity, up to today where we've had a higher market, and now we've had a little bit of a setback. But those basis appreciation has moved a little bit. $4 is still on everybody's target for corn. Delphi, we are currently at 378. Clymers, we are at 380 for cash corn. Our Delphi bean bid is at 10 and a quarter. And our wheat bid today is $5.66.
Do you see $4 in the offing anytime before we get to the January report?
If we anticipate, I mean, I'm speculating, of course.
I know.
I do. Yes, I do.
Why would that be the case? It seems like we have an awful lot of corn, but apparently the bins, our doors are not opening.
Basis, you know, I think in our area, we have such a demand. We consume about a half a million bushels, a little over half a million bushels, just in a 40-mile circle every single day. So we have basically 500 truckloads or 500,000 bushels being consumed every single day. And I think as the price relaxes a little bit, basis will creep up. Or if the Chicago Board of Trade rallies a bit, basis will weaken. But that magic, we'll get all the corn that we want in a short period of time at a $4 cash.
All right, Patrick. Thank you so much for taking the time with us, okay?
You bet, Todd. Thank you.
Patrick Kaufman is with the Andersons facility at Logansport, Indiana. That's the Clymers ethanol plant. He joins us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. Back in just a couple of minutes, we'll take a look at the weather forecast with Drew Lerner. He's at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. This is Illinois Public Media.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
It's National Lager Day. Lager yeast seems to have emerged during the Roman Empire, and its production faced almost immediate opposition from established brewers and the Roman Catholic Church. Private lager brewers were required to produce their beer outside city walls. On this day in agricultural history in 1864, Henry Rowell Schoolcraft died, an American explorer. He is noted for his discovery of the source of the Mississippi River in a lake in northern Minnesota, which he named Lake Itasca. Schoolcraft published an account of the journey in a narrative journal of travels through the northwestern regions to the sources of the Mississippi River. In 1855, Henry Ridley was born. An English botanist, he was largely responsible for establishing the rubber industry. His experiments convinced him of the enormous economic potential of rubber as a plantation crop. His principal contribution was to develop what is still today the basic method for tapping the tree, the removal at each tapping of a thin layer of bark from the end cut, thus permitting a smooth flow of latex and allowing the bark to regenerate. And in 1877, Dr. Jared Kirtland died. A physician, naturalist, botanist, and teacher, he is credited with developing 26 varieties of cherries and 6 varieties of pears. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
Support for WILL Agriculture comes from Murray Wise Associates, LLC, providing nationwide land auctions, farmland sales and management, and financial advice for agribusiness. Information on upcoming land auctions and offerings can be found at murraywiseassociates.com.
This is the closing market report from Illinois Public Media on this 10th day of December. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. We're joined now by Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City to take a look at the weather forecast around the planet. Why don't you take us on a quick tour of the growing regions? Some are in the winter months and others are in the midst of their growing season, please.
Well, certainly top of the list of places that's a bit of interest right now would be in the U.S. hard red winter wheat country. We are going to see a series of 3 storm systems marching through the region over this next 10 days to 2 weeks, and that will help to ease up a prolonged period of drier bias conditions. I think there's only been one storm system that has impacted much of Kansas and Nebraska combined since mid-October, and we're going to see another system develop here Sunday and Monday that will produce rain across both those states and help to moisten up the topsoil a bit. They're still running some fairly significant moisture deficits, so they will need follow-up systems. Well, we do have another one that'll show up on the 17th and 18th, and one more that'll be mostly Texas and Oklahoma that'll show up on the 22nd and 23rd. And if you put all this together, we should see some welcome relief to dryness across U.S. hard red winter wheat country. And it still looks as though there is some issue with snow disappearing across a big part of the U.S. Northern plains and Canada's prairies, taking that snow off the ground raises some concern over the condition of winter wheat if we get very cold again. And, of course, it is going to get cold again, so we'll need to watch that real closely. Now, soft wheat in the U.S. Midwest, as well as the hard red winter wheat in the Central Plains, will be losing winter hardiness over the next week because of the warm weather coming up, and that puts those crops a little bit at risk as well. There's been some concern recently in Australia about too much moisture occurring in the unharvested wheat and barley areas in the southeast corner of that country, but I think that that is a moot point at this point. I don't think there's that much. And that which is left to be harvested is likely to end up with a dry weather bias so that it will get that crop out of the fields without much of an issue. And it also, it looks as though some of our Argentina's crop country has also run into a little bit of moisture here recently. There's been some concern about the quality of the crop there, but for the most part, it's not a big issue. And I think outside of that, most of the concerns that were going on in wheat country in Russia and parts of Ukraine a week or two ago over extremely cold conditions and lack of snow has disappeared. The temperatures are moderated there, and we do have good snow cover on the ground in most of that region.
Thank you so much, Drew, for taking the time. I look forward to talking to you again in 2015. I'll be out of the office from now and then, either on the road or on vacation, one of the two. You have a great holiday season, okay?
All right, you too.
That's Drew Lerner, of course, with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Join us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.